Hello and welcome to New People, New Ways, a podcast in partnership with Fresh Expressions Florida and Fresh Expressions United Methodist that explores new ways of being church through the stories and insights of scholars and practitioners alike. I'm Piper Ramsey Sumner, a layperson and cultivator of Fresh Expressions for the Florida Conference.
And I'm Michael Adam Beck. I'm the director of Fresh Expressions Florida and Fresh Expressions UM. And today we are joined by Angelic Williams. And Angelic is a native of Baltimore, Maryland, and was raised in the Eastern UMC congregation there. She is a mother and a grandmother. I still can't believe that. And currently bivocational, pastoring St. Luke's UMC in Baltimore and working full-time in insurance investigations. She's also a seminary student at St. Mary's Seminary, and her undergraduate studies were at Rollins College, number one in the South, located in Winter Park, Florida. And she has served the church in administration, youth and prayer ministry, but her true love has always been evangelism, outreach, and international missions. And Angelic has spent time in Thailand, South Africa, Peru, Nicaragua, and studied abroad on compassion and Holocaust studies in Poland. Her call is simple: spread this gospel, be inclusive, and lead with love. And friends, I can tell you that she does live up to her name.
Thank you so much for having me.
Yeah.
Yes, welcome. Glad you're here. So our first question, who is Angelic Williams?
Well, I am a child of God who was saved by grace and just became incredibly enthusiastic and passionate about helping others with the same help that I was helped with. So helping others find the same Jesus that saved my life and turned things around for me, and wanting to see others just experience that same grace and love from God.
Amen. So tell us the story of St. Luke's UMC. It's so amazing. And so you kind of led a congregation, I won't say, but they were kind of mostly focused internally, like most churches are, right? About, you know, in the inherited group. And you've led this congregation completely, like out into the community, engaged in mission, doing all kind of Fresh Expression stuff. So tell that story.
So I got appointed out of the appointment season in September, and I had covered there as a just a guest minister while the previous pastor had been out. And so when I came there to preach, it was about 19 people, most of them mature. And a month and a half later, when I was officially appointed by the bishop, I had lots of ideas about ways in which we could extend our community. So I'm a person who is an evangelist at heart. I believe that the gospel should be spread and shared. And so that was one of the first missions. But it was a lot of groundwork in the beginning. So it was a lot of groundwork in terms of preparing a congregation to receive new people. There's some work that has to be done. So that way when people come home and God sends us folks, that our hearts and our spirits are in a place that we can receive it. We don't want to be like the older brother that came from when the prodigal son returned, and his heart just wasn't in the space to receive him. And so we did some work internally first, because I had a vision to build an inclusive community where everybody could find Jesus. And that meant challenging some of our traditions and some of the ways in which we think people should be and show up at church. So that's what it came with. It started a lot with faith sharing. So before we could go out into the community and share our faith, we had to get comfortable with sharing our faith with the people that we love. So people at work, our neighbors, when we go to the doctor, just people that we know in our everyday life. It's difficult to share with a stranger if you haven't even shared with your cousin. So we had to get comfortable with faith sharing first. And then we started to just engage in the community. And that meant going outside and talking to folks and meeting people and having events and introducing myself. And it's sort of us. Sort of grew from there, and our church growth grew as well.
Yeah, so follow-up question on this, because some people, they hear the word evangelism, they're like, ooh, the E word, or isn't that illegal or something? And but the way that you do it and the way you conceive of evangelism is this holistic kind of healing and communal integrity. And, you know, that includes, you know, features of like anti-racism, and that includes, you know, LGBTQ inclusion. And
absolutely.
For you, in your mind, what evangelism is to me is a biblical vision of what actually scripture is talking about and what Jesus did. But explain that to our listeners who might be like, oh, she's talking about evangelism.
Yeah. And I use that word a lot. And I know it sort of scares folks in church because they think that they're going to have to knock on the door of some stranger and do some cold call of the gospel. But it's really about building community and sharing the gospel. Right. And so I believe that we should be doing the same work that Jesus did. And so that means that if we live in a community, like our church is located in a food desert. Right. So if we're located in a food desert, then it means that we need to be in touch with the people that are our neighbors. When I first got there, most of the people in our church drove into the community. They no longer lived in the community. And so we didn't want to drive in our nice cars and drive out after we worship and praise our God and leave the people behind. So that meant that we had to knock on the doors and meet our neighbors and introduce ourselves. And I was like, hey, I'm the new pastor. Go up to the police station at the corner. Hey, I'm the new pastor here. I'm right down the street. You guys need anything? And, you know, sort of building those connections and building those relationships. And so that's really what it meant. And it meant being in touch with what our area needed, you know, what's happening in the community, who lives in our community, because it had been such a long time since there had been any consistent outreach that the people in the neighborhood and the neighbors that they thought they had were no longer there. The people who remembered their outreach from years ago, those folks are no longer there. COVID had happened. People had moved. People's financial situations had changed. COVID required households to become multi-generational. And so the people they thought was their neighbors were no longer their neighbors.
Yeah. So good.
Okay. Sorry, I don't know. My computer was acting funny, but I've heard that, definitely heard that story before of churches where over time, you know, the community changes around the church and the church doesn't really change, even though the people who used to live in that community moved to maybe a nicer neighborhood or, you know, because of these dynamics and different changes. And I've seen where that has happened to the point where the church closes. And so there is kind of sometimes this moment where you have to ask, like, are we a church that truly exists to serve and to be the church, or are we just going to kind of look internally towards ourselves until the end, you know? And so I love that you were able to come in and challenge and just kind of ask people like, hey, can we actually live our faith together? And I think the part you talked about how you shared, how you were like, we need to practice sharing our stories. I think that is such an important thing, because you're right. Even in church, sometimes we don't talk about faith. Really, we don't really talk about our own faith and how we experience it. And so inviting people to say, hey, let's have this discussion. Let's talk to each other. And because I think that can also bring a renewal of somebody being like, why am I a Christian in the first place? Mm-hmm. And sometimes that gets people kind of shaken out of their slumber a little bit, and they're ready to stand up and go out and love people.
Yeah. I also told the Lord that I didn't want to serve a congregation that only served themselves. You know, we collect our offerings and we do our capital repairs and we pay our bills and we love on each other, and that love isn't felt anywhere beyond the four walls, right? So I'm a person who loves to engage with people, and I want to meet people at their needs. And I feel like if Jesus really died for us all, then our congregational makeup should reflect the all that he died for.
Amen.
Yeah. That requires a lot of intentionality, right? So that means that you have to, and this is one of the things that I always say, you can't expect God to send you what you don't make space for. So we didn't have young people because we did not make space for young people. But when we begin to make space for young people and begin to be able to love people past the holes in their genes, then what happened is the whole population that we were missing ended up coming, and people felt comfortable inviting folks in that age demographic that are in their own lives because we had created space for them. And so you can't have or receive what you don't make space for. On two Sundays ago, we had what we called Sensory Sunday. So we were intentionally making space for families with children with autism and intellectual disabilities. And so that means that we have to be willing to adapt our worship services so that others can join us. So that meant that the drums that my 19-year-old drummer plays, he can't play them on full blast. It also means that we might have to have some noise-canceling headphones and some fidget spinners, and we might have to have a calming space and do an ice cream social. And maybe people just read the announcements for themselves instead of us reading them for them out loud. And to make the worship service more succinct so that we can make space for families who are concerned about having like a longer worship experience so that they can join us and be able to practice their faith as well. But that takes intentionality. You have to do that on purpose.
Mm.
See, one of the things that I love about you and your ministry is you are definitely Fresh Expression doing these things out in the community, listening, building community, sharing faith, forming little communal life in Jesus pockets all over the place. But you have not left the inherited church in the rear view. Like in your ministry, it's so integrated. Mm-hmm. And you're doing these things that like your church is the fastest growing in your conference, right? And your inherited church, not just the stuff you're doing out on the, but so you don't see that dichotomy. And you're like, I talk Fresh Expression people. It's almost like, and in some cases, it probably is good that they're hesitant to invite people back to the inherited church because we don't want to invite people into spaces that are unhealthy or harmful and cause more trauma for sure. If we're going to do this work, we also have to have healthy inherited systems too. So some of the things you're doing is like, yes, going out and being the church in the world and also bringing the world into the church and really being intentional about how you're thinking about, you know, families experiencing autism and these things and adapting the inherited church to actually reflect the community. And you're like a case study that if we do that well, churches, inherited churches can be filled again and there can be vitality. It's just, I think people miss what you're doing around the adaptation piece of it and asking a different question, like, what does church look like for this community in a healthy, healing way? And how do we do church and let's invite people into it? But yeah.
Yeah, because part of being vital, right, is part of being vital and being alive is not just having the people that we're comfortable with. You know, I was a person who before I was really sort of practicing my faith in a way in my teenage years and my young adult years, you know, I didn't look like what church folks wanted me to look like, you know? And so, I was getting the evil eyes and I was feeling like there wasn't any space for me and I wouldn't keep coming back to where I didn't feel welcome. And so I know what that feels like. And so I think that people should have the ability to show up as their full selves. And so I show up as my full self, which encourages other people to do that. I only wear a robe on Sundays. And at that time, I only put it on when I get ready to serve communion. Otherwise, I'm about too hot to even function in it. But every Sunday, I'm in sneakers. I wear sneakers every Sunday. And so that appeals to some people. And it's not so that everybody else will wear sneakers. It's just so that, you know, people can feel comfortable showing up as themselves. Just showing up completely at themselves because who God created them to be is enough.
Yes.
That's so good. And I think it is. It's a challenge to get and that kind of growth where it can happen within your church and outside of it. And the invitational, like come as you are is such an important thing, especially now how our culture is changing and a lot of people are wary of church for lots of different reasons. And I think that that Sensory Sunday is a really good example of contextual intelligence, which is something that came out of Harvard Business School or something. It's kind of talked about this and Michael has written about it, but it's this idea that you learn from and adapt to your environment. And so like really successful businesses do that by kind of keeping up with the times and being able to take in new information and adapt what they do to fit. And then we find that with Fresh Expressions, that means understanding the dreams and the goals and the needs of and the cultural background and maybe even some of the baggage that people are carrying with them when you go out to build community with them. And so in what ways, I think that was a good example of contextual intelligence, but how else have you found, or maybe have folks in your congregation surprised you with their own contextual intelligence?
You know, I think the main thing is that we have to continue to do our homework on the community that we serve, right? So we have to know what we're living among, because oftentimes what we do is we create programs and we do outreach based upon what we think people want and what we think people need. And so it's important for us to understand our audience, understand the people that we're trying to do. I don't want there to be a church, you know, and then what we do in outreach. I want there to be sort of this seamless connection, right? So where you don't, like, there's no difference between our church family and our family that lives in the neighborhood who doesn't come with us and worship with us every Sunday. I want there to be a seamless connection. I want us to be a fixture in the community, not furniture in the community. So I want us to do life with them. So if we live in a food desert, then it would be ridiculous for us to not have a food program. How do you live in a food desert and you never feed anybody? That's crazy. So being able to just understand the needs that are in our community so that we can not just offer and build programs around that, but also be able to be on target with that. So that's what we did. And I love to do that kind of stuff in partnership. We don't have a lot of money, right? But not having a lot of money is not an excuse to do nothing. Is sort of my famous saying to them. So even if we only have a little bit of money, I mean, Jesus wasn't walking around with a budget. And so that's one of the things that you have to consider. What he had was the faith and the endorsement of his Father, right? And so that's what we leading with, right? I didn't have a budget, and that doesn't give us an excuse to do nothing. And so just being able to adapt to that and everything. So one of the things that we have coming up, as a matter of fact, this coming Saturday will be our inaugural distribution, is something we're doing in collaboration and in partnership, right? Because I believe in collaboration and partnership, because I feel that our reach can be so much more when we partner with others. If I have my little bit and you have your little bit, what more could we accomplish if we put those two things together? And so our inaugural distribution of what we call a clergy and congregational collaboration, it's called Two Fish and Five Loaves, right? And so it's adopted off the miracle story of Two Fish and Five Loaves. And in this case, we're talking about five loads of laundry. So what we're doing is we are distributing food, and we're also given emergency detergent kits for five loads of laundry, because what we found is that there are 1 in 6 children who don't go to school because they don't have clean laundry, and that it's a huge source of bullying. So what we're trying to do is we're trying to attack the food issue and some of the things that come with the systemic poverty that we see in our neighborhood, right? Mm-hmm. So our church, which is St. Luke United Methodist, and then Mount Washington Aldersgate, which is also in Baltimore, that's in a completely different context, right? They're trying to assist seniors. We're doing the same thing on the same day at the same time. So it's two churches, one mission. And our hope is that this model could be adopted citywide and statewide, so that there would be two fish and five loads all over the city, same day and same time, and people go into the place. So we're going to be, instead of me serving just a few people, we have a collective goal to serve 300 families. And so she'll serve 150 families and I'll serve 150 families. We only had to buy one flyer, put both locations on it. We did everything together to sort of cut costs that it would cost for us to do this. And what I found is that, just like in the story of the two fish and five loaves, they found what they had together, right? The two fish and the five loaves didn't come from a donor. It didn't come from an outside budget. It came from what they already have. So it's kind of like, look around and see what you have. And when we did that, I got a resource from another United Methodist pastor where we got all the food donated, and then all the detergent was donated by my congregation. My congregation donated 785 loads of laundry. And because God is the kind of God who will never allow you to outgive him, we had a donor and one single family from New York who ended up donating 1,040 loads of laundry. So in 1X, wow, we got enough laundry to service 150 families at our location alone for the next 4 months. So sometimes you're going to have to move out in faith, make a request, see what's among you, right? Instead of being concerned about what you don't have, focus on what you do.
Mm-hmm. Yeah, that was the question that I was going to ask, because the impact and the like magnitude of what you're doing with a church that has not a great budget, right? Or not a lot of resources. And so help like our inherited pastors and our people, our Fresh Expression people who are thinking, I have no money. And typically in inherited churches, the budget is all internal stuff, like programming, staffing, those things. And yet here you are like doing really impactful stuff with a small budget. What are some practical like next steps for pastors who are in a similar situation? Small budget, lots of need on the community, and most of the budget dedicated to internal stuff. What have you found effective to help shift a congregation to do some of the things that you're doing?
So one of the things as a leader, right, that I have to put on myself, I have to pick a struggle, right? We can't be broke and I be lazy too. We're gonna have to pick a struggle. So we can't be broke. So what that means is that means that I might have to be online looking for grant opportunities. That means that I have to meet people, introduce myself, be enthusiastic about the mission that God has called me to and the ministry that we're doing. Money follows mission, right? So people are not going to contribute to your nothing. People aren't going to contribute to your ideas that have yet to be implemented and realized. So you have to be doing something. That's why I say, even if you only have a little bit, be doing something, because your little bit of something can always grow. So that means that I will look for grant opportunities. Sometimes it's just a basic acts of a business. Sometimes it's an acts of different grants and opportunities that are at the conference level. I also was in a learning cohort with Kennedy Krieger for that was about 15 to 17 religious leaders all over the state. And I was in this learning cohort for like 8 or 9 months. It was the first of its kind, federally funded. And it was about us developing best practices for how we make our religious spaces more inclusive for those with intellectual disabilities. As a result of me completing that cohort, I was then eligible to apply for a micro grant, which funded our Sensory Sunday. Now, I'm a licensed local pastor and I'm only part-time. And I know that I'm not putting in part-time work, but you can't grow a church by a little bit of effort and part-time work. It just doesn't work. Right. So maybe you'll be able to put your feet up at another time in another season, but this just isn't that season. So it means that you're going to have to work. You're going to have to look for resources. You're going to have to talk to people. No man is successful on its own island, and you're going to have to build relationships. So it really is. And then your congregation will give. Your congregation will give, even though you don't have a whole lot of money, when they see you doing something that God has called you all to do, because I'm not doing this alone. I'm doing this in conjunction with a congregation who loves God's people, who wasn't doing any outreach, but come to find out they have a huge love of outreach, right? They love the community. They want to be out there and they want to be engaged. And so they just need someone to lead them to that effort.
I love that. You've lifted this up several times, so I just want to have you unpack it for our listeners. One of your core commitments is inclusivity, and that's a value that you have that you're leading with that. So what does that look like among these communities that you're starting?
So what I've seen is our inclusivity has not just included those with intellectual disabilities, those with physical disabilities, even the inclusivity to include younger people, because we were a congregation that did not have very many younger people. The first time I preached at St. Luke, I was covering, and it was just so happened to be on a youth Sunday, and there were 2 children in the whole church. So we went from that to a lot of young people. It was really just about making sure that I include. I have to look out over the congregation and say, who are we missing? Who's missing from our family? We have people who are same gender loving in our community. And we've even had some people who are transitioning, who have visited our community and log on to our Bible study, we just making space on purpose for everybody, so that people can navigate their faith without fear of us, the church, being a barrier to them practicing their faith.
Mm, I love that. Making space for everybody. Yeah.
Yeah.
On purpose. That's good. Yeah.
I would love to hear more about how, maybe more examples of how, like, going out into your community. So you have the laundry and the food. Mm-hmm. What other things do you do?
So we do a vacation Bible school, and my outreach director, Miss Wanda, is, I don't know, a godsend. I mean, a literal godsend. And she loves that community, and she will go out, she knock on doors. We walk through, there's a housing project nearby. So we'll go out, we'll pass out flyers, we'll talk and engage people. Probably about two blocks from our church is a senior building. And so we'll go and we'll talk to them. They sort of hang out outside, and some guys with some sort of maybe some suspect entrepreneurial things going on, or like maybe a block from our church. And when we're having vacation Bible school, we serve dinner. And I said, hey, you guys coming up to have dinner with me? So it's really about going out and talking to people and making people feel welcome. There's a number of transitional homes for those who are drug addicted in our neighborhood that I've met. Right around the corner from our church is a family homeless shelter. So there is so much potential in our neighborhood for us to engage. We just have to let people know that we're there. And we have to go out and meet them. So we do that. We do the food. We do a community cookout where we block off two blocks of the street. We give out tons of food, have games. That's going to be on June 8th. Our second one will be in June 8th. The fire department comes, the library comes and give out like 250, 300 books. We have snow cones and food, and we have dancing. And this year we're going to be doing public baptisms outside. So we have about 20 candidates so far. So we're just sort of outside. It just is about being outside. There's also a community collective of other nonprofits in our area that serve our community, and we are a part of that collective. So we go to their meetings so that we can be plugged into the things that they're doing. We offer our space for them to come in, and they did cookies with Santa. So we want to be a part of the life that's going in the community, even if it's not something that we're leading and we're doing. How can we participate in what it's doing? Maybe it's a neighborhood walk or a neighborhood prayer walk that a group of clergy is doing, or that our councilman is doing. How can we be a part of the community life?
Mm-hmm. So those 20 something baptisms and kind of counting that you're getting ready for, where will those actually take place?
They're going to take place right outside on the sidewalk. So we have a pool. We have a pool that we have there, and we're going to give folks testimonies, and we're going to give them a dip. I have invited another pastor who is a brand new pastor as well. We just did a collaboration, three of us, called the Freshman Collaboration, because we're all new to this pastoring thing. And so we try and support each other. So she's going to bring her candidates because she doesn't have a pool at her church. And so we're going to do it together. We're going to have a pool right out front, and we're going to baptize.
Right out on the street.
Right out on the street.
I love that.
So that everybody can celebrate, and yeah. And hopefully somebody will be inspired to want to know this amazing Jesus that we serve. But we have to have our faith on display. So if all of our baptisms take place behind closed doors, and the community doesn't get to see it, they don't get to see that tangible thing that we're doing when people are taking that first step in terms of walking out their faith. So I'm super excited about that.
Mm-hmm. I love it.
I love how holistically you're thinking about all that. And I have some follow-up questions. So
okay. One,
I want to know what makes you tick. Like, why is this such a passion for you? Like, your story that leads up to this. And then I know you've studied compassion and like Holocaust studies abroad. So, and if there's any intersection there, but tell us a little bit about that too.
So I am a reflection of the family that I grew up in. And so the family that I grew up in are people who serve. right? So I didn't grow up in a family where we were looking to be served. We were the family who served. So I would resent my mom for making me get my best friend and tote a whole pot of soup where my friend carried one handle and I carried the other handle all the way up to the other end of our block to give to the lady who had a house full of foster children because my mom had made a big pot of stew. I would always be embarrassed and everything. And so I was raised to give and to serve. I was a hugger at the Special Olympics for the first time when I was 11. I had to go with my mom. My mom's been a communion steward in United Methodist Church longer than I've been alive. And so I had to go with my mom as a kid when she was serving communion and praying for the sick. And so that's just a family that I grew up in, where you made a cover dish and invited the neighbors over, where you showed up at somebody's house with dinner. So that's sort of where it comes from. I, you know, was raised to serve others. And then there was a time in my life where I was like, I don't want to do this. This is like, I don't want to do this. I want to go out and have fun with my friends. And I had that phase. And, but even then, and even in that setting, I was still serving people. I just didn't realize it was happening. So I think it's part of my DNA. But I think the passion for others and wanting to spread the gospel comes from knowing God and still being lost. So being raised in the church and still straying away and losing my way. And so God's just given me this burden for the lost that I hope will rub off on every person that I meet, that we would go out and we would do the work that he called us to do when he gave us the Great Commission, right? That we would go and make baptize folks and make sure that they know that the kingdom of God is at hand. I want people to know Jesus. I mean, I don't exist for any other reason but to tell people about Jesus.
So tell us what the compassion studies and your abroad studies have kind of looked like, and maybe some key insights.
Yeah, so I think studying abroad and on the Holocaust and walking the streets of Auschwitz too, and walking the land at Birkenau and Majdanek and all of these different concentration camps, and seeing them situated right in the middle of communities where people live, right? They aren't like some, they aren't in these remote places. They're in the middle of communities, right? At Birkenau, they're people's backyards back up to where the crematorium is, right? And so when I was studying about that, it really allowed me to be able to see people suffering and be able to sort of appeal to people's humanity, right? That suffering hurts and it's difficult no matter who you are, right? And so it wasn't just African-Americans, you know, in the transatlantic slave trade, but there's all kinds of people and all kind of hurt in the world. And how can I make that better? How can I be a contributor to putting some salve, if you will, on the pain that's in our culture and in our society, right? And the only salve I know is salvation. Literally the only salve that I know. It's the salve that healed me, and I believe it's the salve that'll heal the world. But I don't want the world to continue to hurt because no one has the boldness or the audacity to offer themselves. I don't want to live in a dehydrated culture and know that Jesus is the provider of living water and never offer anyone a drink. Just exist in the dehydrated culture. I want to give people something to drink.
That's good.
I just caught the Holy Ghost right there.
That's great. We could be sources of the living water, right, for people.
Yes.
In a dehydrated culture.
Yeah. One thing I think you were kind of mentioning or getting towards was the importance of hearing people's stories and witnessing. You know, suffering is not something that we want to think about, but it's part of, it happens to people, and it happens to everybody is hurt in some kind of way, and there's different degrees to it, and the most extremes to the less extremes. In allowing ourselves to be open to that and to really experience the empathy and I don't know, I think that's something that Michael talks about when you talk about the compassion of Jesus. It's something that he was like physically had a reaction to the suffering of other people and his care for other people. And I think when that is those kinds of moments, when we allow ourselves to experience that, and even though it is uncomfortable and it's painful, even just to witness and hear the stories of other people, it also can spur, can, motorcycle went by. It's also something, I know I live in an apartment complex, but there's somebody drives really fast through here. But anyway, people's stories, hearing them, it can change us. And I do think it spurs us into action. I think maybe Michael, you can talk about this some. We talked about this idea of withness as opposed to witness, like let your withness about the idea of suffering alongside people or being with the sufferer. If you want to talk about that, Michael, maybe that's your thing, one of your things.
And I would love to hear, Angelic, like you dig deeper with this too, but just like as you were sharing about the dehydration culture and, you know, we have this living water. The way that I kind of can see that most pronounced is like the epidemic of loneliness and isolation. Like we know that's our social condition. There's data, sociologists doing research, increase in mental illness, increase in suicide, substance abuse, overdose deaths. And it's about loneliness. Mm-hmm. And like what I see you doing is creating connection and relationships that's literally healing people's lives, which is what Jesus did. Mm-hmm. Right. It wasn't just the message that he fired at people. It was sharing life with them or witness or being with them in their good, their bad, their ugly, their. And I think his, you know, his move to the bowel gut reaction with and love, that's the clearest like articulation of God's character. Mm-hmm. Is when we see Jesus move with love to heal and to bless and. That we're seeing like into a window into the heart of God. Mm-hmm. And the salve of salvation, as you described it, you know, is about community and it's about knowing yes. your love and it's about having a safe space where you can be in community with others. Mm-hmm. Like you said, it comes down to at some level, a courage and a boldness thing. Mm-hmm. Like we have this precious gift. Mm-hmm. And how selfish of it would it be for us to hold that back to ourselves, right?
Right.
You're teaching your people to go out and to share this and create community. Mm-hmm. And so, yeah, say more about that.
You know, I think it's it really is interesting because I think what happens is that there's a lot of topics, right, that are taboo that the church doesn't talk about, right? And so topics that, you know, we just sort of avoid, right? And so those are the things that I try and talk about, right? And so I'm very open and transparent with my congregation that I am a huge believer in therapy. And so, and that our mental health should be in check. I believe in both Jesus prayer and therapy. And so they know that I'm a Wednesday at 2 kind of a girl is usually when I have my therapy and I'm very transparent and open about that. And so, yes, we're going to pray and yes, I'll counsel and we'll talk, you know, but, you know, sometimes that means that, you know, you have to think about therapy, you know, and that's okay. And that's okay. And so I think that, you know, growing up, no one ever talked about therapy, right? Nobody ever talked about getting this sort of outside help. And I don't want it to be a taboo topic. I don't want people to be uncomfortable and not be able to be transparent about where they are. I don't want them to be a prisoner to the thoughts that are in their mind, right? So I want to do more than just tell them to renew their mind daily by reading the word, right? I want to tell them to do more than that. And so I think it's important for us to talk about those taboo topics. I know that in my teenage years, I was wrestling with a lot of different emotions and hormones. And then I went through a stage where I was very sexual, right? Well, church wasn't talking about that. You know, what do I do? What do I do with all those emotions? How do I get help, right? I can call you and I can and say, help, help and pray for me, right? And that's acceptable, right? When I say, help and pray for me, my diabetes or my blood pressure is high. I need to be able to call you and say, you know what, Michael, I got this boyfriend and it's getting hot. You know, I'm gonna need some help. I'm gonna need some prayer. But no, that isn't churchy, right? That isn't sort of the acceptable prayer request, right? But I want to teach people that we have to help each other do life. We're teaching each other how to walk out this life. And if the Bible is telling us to be ye holy as I am holy, I got to be able to help walk you through that, right? Mm-hmm. I got to be able to help walk you through that. I can't just say be holy and let you struggle at home. It happened during over the Lenten season when we were fasting, right? And I have some people that were fasting for the first time, and I was getting text messages saying, "Pastor, it's getting difficult, it's getting hard." And so we ended up meeting at the apartment of the young lady who leads our media ministry, and I was making a Lent friendly recipe that I was sharing with them, and we shared a meal together, and that was in a smaller group, right? And she made a video. She was like, "Oh, we should do this. We should have a whole page with Lent recipes. We can put this on TikTok." So it's really about really just helping each other navigate our faith and do it together and make it so that it's okay for me to be vulnerable with you. It's safe to be vulnerable with you. So in community, are we safe enough to be vulnerable, right? And can I give you my real prayer request? Not the one that sounds cute, but can I give you my real prayer request, right?
I love that. So I got to share this quick little story. We have these three services on Sunday. One's called Fresh Worship, Recovery Church, and then Vintage. Mm-hmm. And Recovery Church initially was formed for people in the 12-step fellowships and such. But so we would like, people are moving out to go out of Fresh Worship. Some recovery folk are coming in. Some people stay. Well, now we've seen more and more people who come to Fresh Worship, like stay over. And they're like, "Man, something Recovery Church is like, got to stay. I've never thought of myself as an alcoholic or addict." Right. But they're coming and they're sharing stuff. And in that space, so yeah, we have the sermon and the worship and all that. But that's like, to me, where the real church is happening, because people are doing the stuff you're talking about, like bringing that stuff and and talking about those things and sharing openly. So it's more communal, conversational, not a presentational kind of thing.
Right.
And people are bringing like their sexual abuse that they experienced, or talking about, "Hey, I haven't, you know, done this or that," and dropping F-bombs and talking, you know, but there's like real stuff happening in that place. That's so good. So I was just thinking, here's a question for you. And I know this may get to our next question, but so here you are, you got this communities, you got young folk and old folk together, you got mixed, you know, very diverse racially, culturally group. You got, you know, straight, queer, all that together. Do you ever like step back and go Revelation 7, like, "Wow, this looks like, every tribe, race, people like together. This looks like the kingdom breaking in."
I guess I don't really probably as much, because I feel like we still have so much further to go. And I keep trying to tell myself, stop and celebrate the progress along the way. But I feel like we have so much further to go in order to get to the place that I think God really wants us to be in terms of diversity and what it is we look like, right? I'm thinking like an all nation and tongue kind of experience. And so that's what my prayer is for St. Luke. And also so that they would be self-sustaining, right, and grow. They've been around for 75 years. And my prayer is that they'll be able to be at the corner of Gilmore and Riggs and beyond, you know, for another 75 years, that their impact will be on the community, and that the people in that community would not only come to trust them, but to come to need them in a way that they need them. So sort of this mutual need, not us just serving and us giving, you know, just but this mutual need and desire to be in community together. Family, like like real family.
Yes,
real family.
We used to sing that song all the time. I'm so glad I'm a part of the family of God. Growing up, and I always loved that one. Okay, so this is a question that we always ask kind of near the end to everybody. So like Michael said, they kind of hinted at it a little bit, but this is more kind of larger scale, the big church. So what does the future of the church look like to you, and what is your hope?
You know, I continue to apply my faith at what the church will look like. I am concerned, you know. I looked at this question and thought, gosh, I wish I had something more positive to say, right? But I'm concerned. I'm concerned of our inability to be agile in ministry, inability to be adaptive in our, in some cases, refusal to be inclusive. I believe the church has lost its burden for the loss, that we have become so focused internally that we've forgotten about the ministry and the work of Jesus. We are Christians who aren't doing the work that Christ did. And so that concerns me. And so if we aren't adaptable and we don't start making some moves, then I'm wondering what what the next generation of the church will be. Who will be there to lead these ministries? Who will be there? And so so that does concern me. But my hope is that church would, not just the Inheriting Church would continue to exist, right? But it would thrive, right? That there would be more people in the church that it's, than outside of the church. But also that church and what we call church would not even look the same way as what we call church today, right? So that we don't go to church, that we live in church. So church is at home, the church is on our front lawn when we're hanging out with our neighbors, the church is at the playground with a group of single mothers or mothers in the neighborhood, that is at the soccer field when the kids are practicing, that church is everywhere we go. The church is in the coupon club, the church is at school in the pickup where we're serving each other coffee and catching up and maybe having a devotion as we drop our kids off for school. The church is everywhere. The church is everywhere because we are the church and we are everywhere.
I love that. It sounds like new people, new places, new ways. Church, just an ecosystem of church and every nook and cranny of life. So good. And I meant to just celebrate how you shared about deep commitment to prayer and belief in God's healing, you know, power and ability, and holding that together with, and we need therapy and we need to go to 12-step groups. Right? We need to, you know, and none of that's bad. And we can have honest conversations about that. Yeah. I hope that that encourages some people who are listening in on this today. But tell us, if you have any closing thoughts that you, something you didn't say you want to throw in there, and then how can our listeners find you? Like, what's the best way to follow along with you and your work? And if, say, somebody feels compelled, they want to support you in some way, how would they do that?
Okay. Yeah. I think that if I had a final thought, it would be to the church, right? Us who are already believers. And so the question that I would have us as fellow believers ask ourselves is how are you advancing this gospel? How are you advancing this gospel? What are you doing in your everyday life? Not what the church is doing, but what are you doing in your own personal life to advance this gospel? Because this is a commission that we all have. This isn't a clergy commitment, a clergy commission. This is a commission to all believers. And so how are you realizing that in your own life? And if you aren't realizing that in your life, what's one small thing you can do to start, take another step in the direction of really practicing your faith in a way that shares it with others? So that's sort of my final thought, right? Because the fact of the matter is somebody had to have some courage in order to share this gospel with you so that you who were lost could be found. And so I just want you to find somebody else. Somebody else. And so how many spiritual milk cartons are they out there with folks' faces on it? And would you be able to just rescue one? So that's my, but folks can find me. Our church website is Be More, the letter B, M-O-R-E, stluke.com. We're on Facebook, St. Luke United Methodist Church. You can follow me personally on Instagram at girlpreach7. I'm the bald-headed sneaker preacher in Baltimore, just trying to spread this gospel and change the world.
Awesome. Thanks so much for being with us, Angelic. This was an awesome conversation.
Thank you. Thank you for having me. I appreciate the invitation.
Yes, of course. And to those listening, thanks for joining in on this episode of New People, New Ways. If you enjoyed our conversation with Angelic, please share it with a friend, rate, like, review, subscribe, all that stuff. And to connect with us and learn more about Fresh Expressions, you can go to freshexpressionsfl.org and find us on Instagram, Facebook, and Twitter. See you next time on New People, New Ways.